Welcome to the Intuitive Awakening Podcast. I'm your host, Deanna Riddick. I'm an author, teacher, and eternal seeker of truth. I am on a mission to spread metaphysical knowledge to help you awaken your spirit. If you want to learn how to open the door to your divine self, you are in the right place. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Intuitive Awakening. My name is Dina. Thank you for joining me for this week's episode. And today we have a lovely guest by the name of Amy Lee McCree. So Amy is a best-selling author, holistic health expert, and medical intuitive. She has over 23 years of medical intuitive experience, and she's on a mission to teach people how to raise their vibration and live happier, healthier lives. Amy's new book, Aura Alchemy, Learn to Sense Energy Fields, Interpret the Color Spectrum, and Manifest Success, which is already out. It's a powerful guide for unlocking your inner radiance through aura work. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad to be here today.
Well, I'm glad you're here. And I would love to kind of kick this off understanding, because I know you're, you know, a medical intuitive. How did you know you were a medical intuitive? What brought you to that?
So when I was, I graduated high school when I was 17, and then I was in college for the first year. So I was 18, and I went to college for education. And I was working as a nanny part-time, and I found the book Jaguar Woman in the house of these people I was nannying for. They had five kids, half of them were at school, half of them were asleep. And they were this really nice British couple who didn't have a TV. So I read Jaguar Woman by Lynn Andrews, and it was about shamanism. And I was like, oh, I do that. Like, I really resonated with it. So I started taking classes with the Foundation for Shamanic Studies. And then in that class, I met a woman who you worked with a partner, and she was getting that I needed to work on past lives. And she said, oh, I know someone in my town named Lori who does it. So I had a session with this woman, Lori, and she turned out to become my medicine teacher. And she trained me in an oral tradition in which she was trained by her teacher, and, you know, many, many generations back. And so it gave me a really great foundation. I always saw energy. I always saw what I used to call the tiny universe, which I go in my book, Aura Alchemy, I really go into that and what that means from a subatomic particle standpoint. And in that case, what it translates into the aura. But that's what I do as a medical intuitive as well. So I started working with clients about 5 years after I started training with Lori. So I was 23, I was pretty young. And at that time, I called it multidimensional healing, but over the years, it really evolved into medical intuition. And so now that's what I do, and I've been doing it for 23 years.
That sounds very awesome. And, you know, being able to have that type of teacher and guide to help you, like even hone your skills, I think is just, it's really a gift from above.
It was a life-changing gift. And of course, you know, when you're in your 20s, you don't necessarily understand that. And I was really fortunate to have Lori. She went by Laughing Star too. I was really fortunate to have my teacher in my life for over 20 years. She passed in 2019. And even now, you know, years later, her spirit's always around anyways to help me, which is nice.
Yes.
So having a solid teacher, a lot of people don't have that. And now I teach my Atomic Healing Method Medical Intuitive Certification Program. And I've had apprentices over the years too. I've taught, you know, beginning, intermediate, advanced, expert level shamanism for 23 years. And I know, you know, I meet a lot of people through clients, through teaching, who don't have a teacher, and they haven't had a teacher. And it's a different world now. You know, our society is structured a little bit differently. So finding teachers like that can be really valuable.
Yes, it is very, very valuable because, like you said, there's been an explosion of information over the past, I would say, 20 years, but I think people are also looking for that mentor or that one-to-one guide, like hand-holding, you know, to teach
Well,
them the steps.
and the reassurance and the concrete experience that somebody has that has been doing that for years. You know, when I met Lori, she'd been walking that path for a long time. She'd been working with clients and, you know, the way that she did for a long time, including me. You know, we did a lot of healing, and there's just not a substitute for experience and mentorship, essentially.
Agreed. So I want to get into the aura because you said, you know, in your book, you talk about your ability to see energy. When did that start? And when you say see energy, do you mean like the layers of the human aura? Can you kind of walk us through that?
For me, as a child, I saw energy. So I saw what were probably, I used to call them nature sparkles. I go into it more in depth in the book. It's kind of a long story, but what were probably elementals of spirit of place, elementals of, you know, different nature kind of stuff. So I always saw that, and I would see the what now I understand to be the electromagnetic field around trees, plants, rocks. And in those between times, like dusk and dawn, is a time when you can, when all of us are even more likely to see it. We would usually be outside at the end of the day before, you know, my mom said you had to like come in for dinner. You know, back when, I don't know, kids just played outside. I don't think they do that as much now, but, and, you know, I'd see that glow around the trees really strong, and it helped me understand. I mean, I knew everything was alive, but it helped me feel on more of a visceral level what was alive. And then, you know, in the movement of water and dirt and plants and stuff, and what we were kind of digging a lot in the yard, I would see the sparkles. So I grew up with an internal feeling that everything was alive. And several of my books have chapters that have a heading, Everything is Alive, or Everything is Alive and Interconnected. I wrote a book called The Healing Home. It talks about it from that perspective. Aura Alchemy has some of that. And we see, you know, different ways of describing that in Taoist culture, Vedic culture, shamanic traditions. We feel and see that interconnection. So I used to feel that, and I would see it as well. And as I got older, I would still see it. I think at some point, I think when I was a kid, I kind of assumed everybody saw that. And then I don't know if I don't really think it was a big deal. I just thought it was normal. I was like outside my brother. I mean, maybe I mentioned it. I don't really, we were like playing with our Star Wars figures in the dirt. We didn't really care. We didn't, you know, I don't know. When you're a kid, I think you talk, but maybe you don't like share as much. I probably told my mother about it. You know, I think it wasn't squelched, but I think at some point I kind of, probably in middle school, got a little bit more into friends and whatever, you know, kids we were into back then, music and stuff like that. Like rock, not rock music, but like boy bands or whatever we were into. And distracted from it, but also realized that other people weren't really like looking at the tiny universe like I was, and didn't, if they were, they didn't really care about it. So I just kind of, I wouldn't say I lost interest because I was always personally interested in it. I had a subscription to Astronomy Magazine. I was in the astrophysics book club or whatever. You know, I was a nerdy kid. I had a lot of learning disabilities too, so I have kind of a unique brain. So, you know, I still had all of that within, but it really wasn't until that, like right after high school, I came back around to it. I was always seeing it though, but it was turned down. And that's part of what I teach in my classes for people, is essentially how we turn up or down depending upon the person our ability to sense intuitively. And so for some people, it's turning it up and learning the unique ways that we do see, feel, sense, hear, smell, taste, know, like emotionally feel, and more energy and intuitive information. But it's also been something for me that I've always seen. Did it increase? Absolutely. And when I brought shamanism into the mix, you know, because it was already very innate for me, it really brought the pieces together in a new way.
So the aura around a human body versus, let's say, you know, the aura around, you know, a tree or a plant or flower, what are these differences? What does it look like when you're seeing the aura around another human being?
So the way I define an aura is a biologically generated electromagnetic field around all living things, made of subatomic particles called photons that comprise light and electricity. And I really go deeply into that in the book, that there's actually a scientific explanation for that. So the aura around a human versus a tree versus an animal versus a smaller plant, it's not really that different. They're all biologically generated electromagnetic fields that are often a composite of the movement of photons throughout the entire organism. So like in our bodies, you know, we go really deeply in aura alchemy. I try to make it really fun to talk about like particle physics and quantum mechanics and what everything is made of. But we really go deeply into what our bodies are made of. We're made of fermions and bosons. Fermions are matter and energy, and bosons are force and charge. And one type of boson is a photon. So photons are light. So our sun is like constantly emitting, constantly emitting photons. And when we're facing it, when it's daytime, the photons are coming here and they're bouncing off of fermions, matter. And depending upon the spectrum of the matter, the way the light bounces, we do or don't see it. So that's why when we have no photons, like pitch black, we cannot see the matter in the room because the photons aren't bouncing off it. So photons move through lots of different conductors. Our body is a conductor. Our nerve cells, our muscle fibers, everything really that happens in our body happens due to the movement of photons. Like I'm half Greek, so I'm like gesturing all over the place while I'm talking to you. That's the movement of photons. So are the, you know, involuntary biological functions like breathing and everything. Everything that's happening in our body is prompted by the movement of photons. The thoughts in our brain are the movement of photons through dendritic synapses and more. And then, you know, the sensation that we feel in the body is moving through these nerve fibers. It's all photons, which are electricity and light. So the neat thing about photons, when you take a light, like say you're going to turn a lamp on, and the light that came from the wall outlet traveled on an uninsulated copper wire, that light would be comprised of two types of particles: electrons, which are actually fermions, so they're energy basically. They're not matter, they're kind of, but they're part of matter. And then photons. And so the electrons are kind of like the medium that holds the photons in this case. But the neat thing is, in an uninsulated copper wire, the electrons will travel along the wire. The photons travel along the outside of the wire because they are not only light and electricity, they are electromagnetic force and they are an electromagnetic field. That's actually what they are. So in our body, it's sort of like we have all these wires, nerve fibers, muscle fibers, whatever, conducting photons through us all the time. They are made of electromagnetic force. They are a field. So the composite, the combined energy of all of that photonic movement constantly in the body creates an electromagnetic field around us called the biofield or an aura that radiates about 3 feet out in all directions. And so in a plant or a tree, it might be a little more faint because like the sap is moving really slowly through the tree or the plant is smaller, but it's similar. And around animals, same thing, like relatively proportionate to size. So around like mammals, like if you look at your dog or whatever, it would be comparable to a human because there's, you know, muscles, blood, there's a lot of photonic movement basically. Whereas in like a little insect or something, it's just smaller, so it'd be smaller. So that's what our aura is actually made of. It's, you know, there's lots of awesome, like sort of woo-woo energetic stuff. And we really use our intuition to tune into all of it in the book. But the first basic building block is your aura is an electromagnetic field. And it's a real thing. It's generated by proven subatomic particles, elementary particles, they're called, that really exist.
So what kind of information, since you're a medical intuitive, and I imagine, I mean, I'm making an assumption here that when you are assisting somebody that you're looking at their aura for information, what type of information would be contained in a person's aura?
So as a medical intuitive, I'm looking at the whole body and the aura.
Okay.
And sometimes the home too. So as far as that part, in that part of my work, my job, I'm very driven to find the root cause of whatever the imbalances are and then discover the solutions and how we can reverse engineer from where the person is to really back into feeling great all the time. And I, you know, I think like different people get satisfaction from different things. Like, so, you know, the satisfaction, like the dopamine hit you get from checking something off a list or whatever. I get like a really deep satisfaction from finding that root cause and then figuring out how to fix it, essentially, you know, and it's really through talking to people's spirit guides. That's really what I do. But I do look at this tiny level and look at particles. And I use a lot of traditional Chinese medicine and Taoist theory. That's like kind of not the only thing, but along with the science and stuff like that, a little bit of Vedism. So as far as in the aura, and I take us through some of this in the Aura Alchemy book too, there's a lot of things contained in the aura. I sort of think of it like our body is, you know, our human projector. And then it projects out whatever frequency vibration that we're holding, consciously or unconsciously or both, by the way. And that's creating our reality. And our aura is like the lens on the projector. So if we can A, keep the lens real clean, and B, perhaps charge the lens with high vibrational energy, which would be equivalent to like putting a filter on it or whatever to make it like really joyful or really prosperous or a really high vibe, then we can take our internal projector and maximize its ability to create our reality as we desire. So when we look at the aura from a medical intuitive perspective, one of the things I take you through in the book is something, you know, I have a lot of proprietary medical intuitive stuff I've been shown over 23 years. One of those is that when the egg from which we were all each created, you know, each had an egg that we were created from, on the inside of that egg, you can imagine like an etching of whatever encodement you want to call it, a secret ancient language or something, that's holding all kinds of ancestral energy from that line. And some of that could be great. Some of that might be past trauma or whatever. When we incarnate, that inner etching on the inside of that egg gets duplicated out on the inside of the outer edge of our aura. So in the book, I take us through a process where we buff out anything that's low vibrational or not for our highest good anymore, and we leave the good stuff, and then we really infuse it with high vibrational joy, energy, and light. So we maximize the frequency of the aura, and we've removed like basically a lot of ancestral, even generational trauma that perhaps we haven't even gotten to, but it's there in that lens coloring our experience of life and the way that we're projecting our human projector to create our lives. So we take that out of the way, and that raises our frequency.
So if somebody were to do this ancestral type of healing, you would expect to see a change in what their aura would look like.
The way auras quote unquote look is entirely subjective. I mean, different people's intuitive senses are going to interpret everything with their lens, through their brain, etc. What we're really doing is tapping into streams. I think of it as like streams of photons, basically streams of, you know, force or charge, kind of like telepathy particles, which, you know, there's some interesting research by Dean Radin about telepathy particles. Like, really, what would it be? We've all had that experience where we like think of somebody and then they call on the phone or whatever, and we're like, what really made that happen? Why are we connected? We know that we have these photons that, you know, we see them bounce off. We see the matter bouncing them off of some things, but they go through things. Plus, there's like all these other kinds of particles, neutrinos, which we talk about in my book quite a bit. We use them for manifestation. They just go through almost everything. There's all these types of particles we know, and probably many we don't. And the thing that's neat about the particles we do know about, so we could conjecture perhaps also about the particles we don't, not only are they a particle, like a packet, they're also a wave. So that means, yes, they can be described mathematically by a wave function equation. They actually also exist as a wave. The other thing they are is an excitation of an infinite field. So think of every one of these particles as part of its own unique infinite field. It's a wave and it's a particle. So when we take that into this idea of thought, we have these potential telepathy particles. So the way that we think or perceive about an aura is entirely subjective. In my book, I give you like a really extensive array of potential language and interpretation for what you perceive. I help you open up your intuitive senses to perceive an aura in all different ways. And then I take you through like what I think the medical intuitive implications are for it. I made this color chart. It took me a long time when I was writing the book. It's like, I don't know, 100 plus colors. So it's pretty nuanced. Like, what's the difference between, you know, golden yellow and pale yellow, like all these different things. And I love colors. I like to paint and stuff like that. So that was fun for me, but it was like, and I described, so it would say like cobalt blue. It'd be like slate blue with tones of royal blue. Like, it's described. So it really got, it was fun to get granular with color. So I gave a menu of what it might mean, but that's through my lens. So for me, cobalt blue might mean, you know, cool tones, yin energy from a traditional Chinese medicine perspective, tranquility, and a little bit of the essence of Archangel Gabriel. Like, that might be what it means for you. For you, it could mean ocean waves, streaming water, and feelings of tranquility. It could mean different things for different people. So the way an aura looks is subjective. The other thing I always talk about is auras are mutable and constantly changing. So there's really not like some, you know, defined layering system or a defined color spectrum. It just depends on how we perceive it and the degree to which we've also cleaned the lens, not only of our own aura, but our objectivity as an intuitive. So that's the other thing in my training. I really teach us, we want to take our predispositions, our, I don't want to say judgments, but like ideas out of the way, so we can get the clearest stream of energy and information and translate it as objectively as possible. That's another thing we work with. And with that mutability and constant changingness, I also talk in the book in a very like fun and non-judgmental way. I do debunk the science of aura photography, because the majority of those aura cams are actually biofeedback machines that just take a literal photograph and then take a biofeedback reading and print it according to whatever their program is on the picture. There's no photograph of the aura. We don't really photograph photons because we don't actually see them. We only see the matter they're bouncing off of. So it's like scientifically not possible to photograph the aura.
Oh, now I think people will be sad to hear that a little bit.
I know, but that's why I say in the book, that being said, we've had so much fun and lots of people have had so much great experience having an aura photograph and enjoying that. And whatever came from that biofeedback reading and got translated as a, image of color on the picture, perhaps it resonated for them and helped them understand something about themselves. So judgment around it is not bad. Divination, whether it's like literal or figurative, can be valuable, and it helps us, reflect on ourselves and know ourselves too.
Definitely. So what happens with the commingling of auras? With whether it's a friendship or, relationship or family. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's a great question. I have a section of the book on that is called like togetherness. So it goes into like what happens to auras during sex and romance, like fun stuff like that, and a little bit that you can do with that. And one of the things I talk about too is the family aura. I mentioned, I had a degree in education, so I didn't work as a teacher for two. I only worked as a teacher for 8 years, but when I did, I really got to see that the different stages of the energetic development of children. And one of the things I understood, and this would be, I'll qualify this would be in the context of children who were probably living with their biological parents, or if not, had started in infancy, because that was primarily what I would see. And so I would see what now I call the family aura. Up until about age seven, it was about age seven where the child would first truly differentiate and almost like come out of typically the primary caregiver, so usually the mother, but not necessarily the mother's aura in an ideal situation. Mm-hmm. And so that would mean like even, because I was already trained and working part-time as a healer and stuff, so I would see, like, especially when I taught like preschool and kindergarten, so little kids, they would be, at school, obviously not with the parent, but in the majority of situations, especially the good ones, somewhat still wrapped in the energetic protection of the typically the mother or primary caregiver's aura. And so then at seven, typically I would see they would start to step out and have their own more individuated energy field. Now, they still had that, but they were within the context of the family aura, essentially. And so that can be, there's many different kinds of families. I did see that with adoptive families too, like wonderful adoptive families where the child was ingratiated in the primary caregiver's aura in a slightly different way, but great. And then the family aura itself, depending upon the people who live in a home together and the time spent and stuff like that, there's a certain amount of collective energy within that construct, and then everybody having their individuation. So I also talk in the book about those of us who are HSPs, like highly sensitive people, empaths, whatever you want to call it, how sometimes being in crowds or the groups, many auras in one places, can be a challenge because it's a lot of stimulation. So we look at what we can do about that and also why. And we look at, whether it's friendship, romance, family, whatever, when, if we have these auric eggs around us approximately 3 feet out in all directions, when they touch, what happens? When they occupy the same space, what happens? And there's a lot of different things that can happen if the emotions are good, if the people are feeling good, if everything's in a good space, then it can be really enhancing and nourishing. And for some people, it may also mean that we do need time separate where we're not overlapping, basically. And some people, it feeds them and it doesn't drain them. So there's different settings, I think, constitutionally for people. And then there's also the side of it where if it's, you know, not like people you're close to and it's strangers or whatever, then that idea, whether we look at it energetically or psychologically, of boundaries kind of comes up, mm-hmm. and how we own our space, really holding the integrity of our space, like our bubble, our auric egg, really filling it with our own energy and essence, so that although other people's auras, like say you're in the airport or the grocery store and people are walking by, they might brush through, it doesn't stick because you've filled your space so completely. So that's another thing we go into quite a bit in the book, because I know for a lot of us, that's a factor. You know, how do we feel good in crowded spaces? I have things that I teach in there about how to like seal up, own our space, fill our space. I personally need to do that. I always have like a habit when I go to the airport, I do that, you know, maybe to the store, stuff like that. I just try to do that. And the more it's not really automating it, but it's like automating it in our mind, like making it a habit. Okay, when I go somewhere, I seal up. Or like when I go to a group dance class, I seal up just because a lot of people are moving around and maybe they're, you know, energetically emoting, which is great. That's something dance is great for. But I just want to be, you know, filled with my own frequency.
Definitely. And I think there are, especially people who are listening, I think there's a lot of empaths or highly sensitive people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they do feel very anxious in very crowded spaces, even just going to, I don't know, as an example, Target or Sam's Club or something where you're really overwhelmed. Yes. So you just kind of spoke a little bit about sealing up. Can you give the audience just an example and talk about that? Like, what does that mean? Like sealing up before?
I have an invocation I use for that. So I share it in the book. I'll share it with the audience if everybody wants to try it.
Okay.
So we can see what it feels like. Yeah. So as we'll do this in a minute, call and response, but as we say it, you can picture like a swirl of energy. I usually like to do it starting up at the top of your aura. So if you have this like oval shaped bubble around you, and it would kind of spiral down and around, and it would get wider, you know, as it comes down around the head. And then at the bottom, it would sort of seal up at the bottom too. So kind of spiral it down top to bottom. Occasionally people like to do bottom to top. If that works for you, that's fine. So it's not quite like a tornado or a vortex. It's just like a little swirly spiral that's gonna, of light, you'll picture coming down and around as we say this. So you can, if you choose, you can repeat after me. I seal. And protect. All wormholes. Portals.
Or portals.
Openings.
Openings.
Sorry, I lost my train of thought because you're saying it.
Well, you had me at portals. And
I know, I felt it from you. Yeah. And I went like, wait, let's start like, over.
Wait a minute, which portals?
So we're closing anything that's open in the aura, basically. Okay, let's do this again. Let me see if I can. I'm going to close my eyes so I can stay focused because I'm looking at you and I'm like,
no problem.
ADD. Okay, ready?
Sure.
I seal and protect. All wormholes. Portals.
Doorways.
And openings. In my physical. And etheric bodies. In all dimensions. And interdimensions. And all realities. As needed. For my highest good. It is done.
I love that.
There we go. I had to close my eyes to focus on that.
Well, this is very, I think this is incredibly interesting because I think many people aren't really like approaching their day thinking about any sort of interaction or impacts from portals mm-hmm. or wormholes or something to
yeah. We live in a multidimensional universe. You know, we have what we see, and then we have extreme multiplicity beyond that, infinitely. And when we just like try to address all the possibilities that way, it seems to work, you
Yeah,
know?
that is incredibly helpful. And, you know, you were speaking about making this like a habit before you go out and do something. What advice would you give to people on trying to, you know, make something very new a habit? Because most of us will say, okay, I'm going to do this. And then after the day, it's long
I
gone.
know. I think once you memorize it, it's easier too. So I guess people could put it on their phone. I would put it on a note card and put it like in the car where I could see it. So then it would be like when I get out of the car, I do it.
That's a good idea.
A note and on like the nightstand, and when I wake up, I do it.
I
Because then
love
it's
that.
like done for the day. I mean, in theory, you would do it once, but it's kind of like we kind of need to redo it periodically. And then if you get in the habit of doing it like every morning when you get up, or every time you're getting out of the car or in the car because you're going to go somewhere, maybe you do it before you start driving, eventually you'll have it in memory. I mean, aside from me ADDing there, it's not that long. You know, if you have a little note card or whatever, you'll get it pretty, you know, after a few weeks or whatever, you'll know it. And then you'll be used to saying it. And in a lot of what I teach shamanically too, you know, we want some of these things to become more rote, because when they do, we don't have to think about those. Like, we have it memorized. Here's what we say when we start a shamanic journey. Here's what we say, like in my medical intuitive certification, here's what we say when we start a medical intuitive session. We've memorized it, and it's not pressure to memorize it. It's just repetition. Eventually you get it. And when we have it memorized, it's much easier to have the thought, oh, I should say that, and it's right there.
Yeah.
But until then, we have a note card or note in the phone. But I think, I don't know, for me, seeing it in the environment is important. You can also put it in the bathroom mirror. So like when you're getting ready in the morning, you could do it then and think of, you know, what would work. And it's once, like if people were listening and they pause and write it down or go back and write it down, it's not long. It's a short paragraph. So it would fit right on a little note card.
That is very, very true. So if somebody wants to get your book, where can they find it?
Everywhere books are sold. Amazon, you know, all the places. It's a Hay House book. So if some people are, you know, in the Hay House universe, or they're in the card deck club and stuff. I do have an Oracle deck coming out in 2025 as well with Hay House.
Exciting.
Yeah, so you can get it anywhere books are sold. And if you like it, I would be so honored for you to leave an Amazon review, because for us authors, that is like absolute gold.
Yeah.
And on my Instagram, TikTok, etc., like where the link tree is with all the links, there's a link that says you can get a free gift from me for leaving an Amazon review. So it's my Grounding Joy Bundle. It takes you through a way to really ground and root your energy into the earth. It's different than what we just did, but along those lines, like very, you know, systematic and something you can do. And then it takes you through my old e-course, Electromagnetic Feeling Science, which is all about the emotions of electromagnetic energy, which is a lot of fun. And basically infusing your life with that energy of joy, which is the highest vibration in the known universe. So we can really upgrade our frequency. So if you'd like to get the free gift after you review the book, you can do that. We have all kinds of fun stuff. And everyone can also find on my website, amyleemercury.com. They can find all my books. Aura Alchemy is actually my 18th book.
Awesome. That's
incredible.
So
there's lots of other stuff too. But this book is definitely a heart project, because Hay House, you know, allowed me to write about particle physics and my theories on that, which is really exciting.
That is really exciting
to me.
And incredibly informative. So everybody, I will have links below in the show notes so you can find her book, her website, and
Yay!
Instagram. So thank you again for being on the show. This was extremely informative, and I think a very
Yay!
Different approach to, you know, what we traditionally find in literature about auras.
Yeah, a little different. I'm glad you enjoyed it. And the book is a lot of fun. It's colors, textures, smells, scents, sounds. What does it all mean? How to all the herbs, the way you can use them to clear your aura, just a fun toolbox in there too.
That's incredible. Oh, I'm so glad that you had this, that you came today and had this discussion with me. I really enjoyed it and, I'll be excited to talk to you about, future projects. So thank you so much, Amy.
Me too. Thank you. It's great
All right,
to be
take
here.
Care.
Thank you.